Welcome in, everybody. Today we're going to be doing a deep dive on Frederick Douglass and specifically his autobiography from 1845.
Yeah.
And it's one thing to read about slavery in like a history book,
Right.
but to read about it from somebody who actually went through it,
Totally different, yeah.
it's a totally different thing.
Yeah, and in this case, it's not even just his perspective because you've also got the preface that William Lloyd Garrison wrote,
Oh, right.
prominent abolitionist, and then a letter from Wendell Phillips, who was
Right.
also a very important person in the abolitionist movement. So you get like a lot of different perspectives on the same
Yeah.
story.
And it's just, I mean, the thing that really struck me right away is that Frederick Douglass didn't even know his birth date.
I know. It's incredible.
That just shows you right off the bat how they dehumanized people.
Well, it really sets the stage for how slaves were not seen as people. You know what I mean? Like not knowing your own birth date, it's such a fundamental thing. And yeah.
And then he talks about living on this Colonel Lloyd's plantation,
Right.
and specifically this Great House Farm.
Yeah.
And he talks about how there was this hierarchy even
Yeah.
among the slaves.
Oh.
Like the slaves who were allowed to run errands to the main house
Right.
saw that as,
A privilege.
yeah, like a privilege.
Yeah, it's really interesting how even in that system, people sought
Yeah.
ways to,
Status.
yeah, to have status.
Yeah.
But what's really interesting is that Douglass kind of connects that
Yeah.
to the way power dynamics work in
Yeah.
the world today. You know, it's not all about physical labor. It's like a psychology
Yeah.
of oppression and how people kind of
Yeah.
adapt and even perpetuate those
Right.
systems, even when
Yeah.
the ones being controlled.
Right. It's kind of like
Yeah.
yeah, I don't know. It definitely makes you think. And then he talks about the slave songs and
Right, the
how
sorrow
song,
songs.
yeah.
Yeah.
They weren't songs of like happiness or
Yeah.
joy. They were
Expressions of sorrow, longing for freedom.
right, yeah.
Not even just pain, it was like a form of resistance, you
Right.
know?
Yeah.
When you think about it, like they were forbidden from speaking their own languages, practicing their own religions,
Right.
but through music, they
All
could
right.
keep their culture. They could communicate in coded ways and they could keep hope alive.
It's incredible, yeah. But also just heartbreaking to think
Yeah.
about if he talks about the whipping of his Aunt Hester.
I know,
It's just a powerful, horrific image.
Yeah, and I think that's the point, right? He
Yeah.
doesn't want us to shy away from that, the
Yeah.
horrific reality of slavery.
Right.
You know, this wasn't just an abstract historical event.
Yeah.
This was a lived experience
Yeah.
filled with pain and suffering. And it's not just isolated incidents.
Right.
He talks about the overseer, Mr. Gore,
Yeah,
shooting
right.
Demby,
Right.
a slave and facing no consequences. So this
Right.
was like systematic brutality
Right.
sanctioned by the legal system itself.
That's just chilling.
Yeah, it is.
And then he talks about how Captain Auld
Right.
didn't want him to learn how to read.
Yeah, he forbids him
Yeah.
from learning.
And what I thought was so interesting is that he thought that if he learned how to read, he would be unmanageable.
Exactly. Yeah, it's ironic, isn't it?
Yeah.
Suppressing knowledge only fuels his desire
Yeah.
for knowledge and ultimately his desire for freedom.
Right.
Highlights how education can be a powerful tool for liberation
Yeah.
and how those in power often try to control access to it to
Yeah.
maintain their own power.
He was so resourceful though. Like he would learn from the white kids in the street. He would
Yeah.
study ship markings.
Yeah, he was clever.
Yeah.
But that literacy also brought him a new kind of pain,
Yeah.
you know, a deeper awareness of his situation.
Yeah.
Of the injustice of it all.
Yeah.
So knowledge can be a double-edged sword in that way,
Yeah.
empowering, but it can also deepen the pain.
It's a real turning point in his life.
Definitely.
And it leads him to start questioning, like, the role of religion.
Yeah.
Because he starts to see how hypocritical it is.
Oh, yeah.
Like, all these slaveholders are
Are
claiming to be Christians,
slaves. Yeah.
and yet they're
Justifying their cruelty.
using the Bible to justify
Yeah.
their actions.
Yeah, that hypocrisy is a major theme
Yeah.
throughout his narrative.
And it's not just individual slave owners. Like he
No.
talks about how he went to a
Right.
Sabbath
A
school
Sabbath school, yeah.
that was meant to teach
Slaves about the
slaves
Bible.
about the Bible. And it was violently disrupted by
Yeah, by so-called Christian.
so-called Christian men.
Yeah.
What do you even make of that?
It's one of those things where his story becomes so challenging because he's not just telling his own story,
Right.
you know,
Right.
he's asking us to examine our own beliefs,
Yeah.
our own complicity
Yeah.
in systems of oppression.
Right.
You know, if Christianity is about love and compassion,
Yeah.
How could it be used
to justify this?
To justify such inhumanity?
It's a good question.
It's a question that resonates today.
Yeah.
You know?
And then there's Mr. Covey, who he describes as like a
pious soul and a
pious soul and a brutal nigger breaker.
Nigger breaker. Talk about hypocrisy.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, Covey really embodies that kind of deceptive nature of a lot of religious slaveholders.
Yeah.
I mean, he was known for using psychological manipulation as much as physical violence to break the spirits of those he enslaved.
And Douglas's time with him was a period of like intense suffering.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was also kind of a turning point.
It was, yeah.
Because he fought back.
He fought back, yeah. He refused to be broken.
Yeah.
That was a turning point. He physically fought Covey.
Yeah.
That was a real act of defiance that reignited his determination.
To be free.
To be free.
Yeah.
And it's a really powerful moment
in
the narrative because it shows us that even in the face of just unimaginable cruelty, the human spirit
can endure.
Can endure.
Yeah, it's just an amazing story of resilience.
Yeah, it is.
And this is just the beginning of his journey toward freedom.
Yeah. You know, it's amazing to me that after what he went through with Covey, he still had hope. Like, he never gave up.
Right.
He was always trying to find a way to make his situation better.
Right. And he talks about trying to hide his time.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was something that slaves in like urban areas could sometimes do.
Yeah, skilled slaves.
Yeah.
Skilled slaves.
Where they would essentially like rent themselves out
and
pay their masters.
Pay a portion of their earnings.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's remarkable.
It is remarkable.
That even within the confines of slavery, he was searching for some kind of autonomy.
Yeah.
Some way to use his skills and have some control over his own life.
But the path to freedom
was a lot more perilous.
Yeah. A lot more perilous.
His first attempt at escape, which involved a whole group of slaves, ended in capture.
Oh, man. Can you imagine
and
like feeling?
And he talks about those slave traders.
Disappointment and the fear.
Soul drivers, he calls them. Yeah. Like vultures. descending and assessing their worth as if they were just cattle.
Oh, gosh.
That dehumanization is one of the most chilling aspects of his whole account.
Right.
That reduction of human beings.
To mere commodities.
To mere commodities.
Yeah.
It forces us to confront the brutal economic realities of slavery.
Profit and greed.
Yeah, profit and greed fueled this whole system.
Thankfully, he was spared the auction block.
Right. Captain Auld brought him back to Baltimore, hoping to put him to work, learning a trade.
Yeah, you'd think that would be an improvement.
You would think.
But even that was...
But it wasn't.
Yeah, it was still...
Because freedom isn't just about physical emancipation. It's about...
physical and economic.
And economic.
Right.
And he found himself...
At the mercy of all these...
At the mercy of these white workers.
Yeah, the white workers.
In the shipyard.
Who treated him horribly.
A lot of them treated him just contempt.
He talks about being bombarded with all these orders and threats and... just constant belittlement.
Yeah.
And it just shows how invasive that racism was.
That racism was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how it like...
It infected every...
Yeah. It just infected every aspect of life.
Yeah.
And when he tried to stand up for himself...
Yeah. When he defended himself against...
Against one of the co-workers.
Assault from a white co-worker.
He was threatened with lynching.
Yeah. The threat of lynching.
Like even in a free state.
A stark reminder of the danger.
Not safe.
Yeah.
It's just... It really is.
The hypocrisy.
It's just this incitement of hypocrisy.
Yeah.
Of this system that claims to uphold justice,
but
denied it to so many people.
An entire segment of the population.
But instead of breaking him, it just strengthened his resolve.
Right.
He knew he had to escape.
He knew.
And so he starts planning.
He starts meticulously planning his second escape.
Escape attempt.
This time he took a different approach, though. He had learned...
He learned from his mistake.
From his previous attempt. The importance of secrecy.
Yeah.
And self-reliance. He adopted the motto.
Yeah.
Trust no man.
Can you imagine living with that?
I know.
Like that constant fear and suspicion.
It must have been incredibly isolating.
Yeah.
Every white person, a potential enemy.
Yeah.
Every encounter, a potential threat.
That's in
Burma. But it's a testament to his courage and resilience that he persevered.
And when he describes his escape.
Yeah.
It reads like a thriller.
It does. It's like
just all the careful planning.
The close calls.
Yeah, the close calls. And then just that sense of relief when he finally gets to the north.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
It's hard to believe.
That he pulled it off.
I know.
But even when he gets to New York, he's still not free.
Right. He's not really free.
Because of the Fugitive Slave Act.
Yeah.
He could be captured at any time.
That Fugitive Slave Act cast a long shadow over the lives of escaped slaves.
Yeah. It created a climate of fear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
uncertainty.
That's where the Underground Railroad comes in.
Yes.
Thankfully, he was able to connect with David Ruggles,
yeah,
who was a key figure in, yeah, the abolitionist movement.
Who provided shelter and guidance.
It's just amazing, that network of people.
Yeah, the Underground Railroad.
Yeah.
It was remarkable.
Both black and white.
Yeah, black and white.
Risking their lives to help.
Their own freedom.
To help others.
Yeah, it's a testament to human compassion.
It really is.
And finally, he arrives in New Bedford, Massachusetts.
Yeah.
This city, known for its abolitionist sympathies.
Yeah.
Imagine his surprise when he encounters this,
I know,
thriving black community.
This thriving,
all this industry,
free black community,
and prosperity.
Yeah, he saw firsthand
the industry,
the prosperity, the, yeah, sense of dignity
experienced in the South,
and self-reliance that had been denied to him. Yeah, he talks about that contrast,
no,
between, like,
it's a powerful contrast,
supposed grandeur,
yeah,
of Southern slaveholders,
yeah,
and, like, the actual wealth,
the genuine wealth
and industriousness
that he found among free black people in New Bedford,
yeah,
challenged his preconceived notions,
yeah,
about race and equality.
It really did.
Yeah.
And it showed him, like, what was possible.
Yeah. The true potential,
yeah,
of a society where people are judged by the content of their character.
Yeah.
Not by the color of their skin.
And it was in New Bedford that he discovered.
Yes.
The Liberator.
The Liberator.
The abolitionist newspaper.
William Lloyd Garrison.
By William Lloyd Garrison.
Abolitionist newspaper.
Yeah.
That was a pivotal.
Just think about the impact that a newspaper can have on somebody's life.
Validated his own experiences,
right,
and gave him a platform.
Yeah.
To share his story to the world.
Yeah. It's just this collection of ink and paper.
I know.
It could be so.
It's a reminder of the power of ideas.
Yeah, so powerful.
Of words to inspire and ignite change.
It really is. And it makes you think about, you know, today's world and all the,
yeah,
parallels.
Absolutely. Douglass's story is not just a relic of the past. It's, huh, a mirror,
yeah,
reflecting the ongoing struggle,
yeah,
for justice and equality.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when you look at the systemic inequalities that still exist today.
Right. Mass incarceration.
Yeah.
That disproportionately affects
people of color.
People of color. Economic disparities,
yeah,
that limit opportunities, yeah, for marginalized communities.
It's like those echoes of dehumanization that he fought so hard to overcome are still here.
They're still here. Yeah. It's like,
yeah,
they're reverberating. And,
yeah,
you know, just as Douglass found his voice and,
yeah,
used it to challenge,
right,
the status quo,
yeah,
we too have a responsibility,
yeah,
to speak out against injustice,
right,
to demand better.
Yeah. So what can we do? Like, how do we take that feeling,
right,
of outrage?
It starts with education.
Yeah.
We need to understand the history,
right,
and the legacy of slavery,
yeah,
how it continues to shape, yeah, our society today.
And be willing to have those tough conversations about.
We need to be willing to have those difficult conversations about,
yeah,
race,
yeah,
and inequality.
Even when it's uncomfortable.
Even when they're uncomfortable, yeah.
Yeah, it's about recognizing those invisible tormentors,
yeah,
that Douglass talked about.
The forces of oppression.
And just working tirelessly to,
it still lurk in the shadows.
Dismantle them.
Yeah, and it's about supporting organizations,
yeah,
that are on the front lines of this,
yeah,
fight.
Yeah.
Groups that are working,
yeah,
to create
a better world.
A more just and equitable society.
Yeah, yeah. Well, his story is a powerful reminder that change is possible.
Yes.
But it takes.
But it requires collective effort.
Yeah, collective effort. It takes all of us.
It requires each of us.
Yeah.
To do our part.
Do our part. Well, this has been a really powerful.
It has. Thank you for having me.
Taking this journey with us.
It's been my pleasure. Remember, the fight for justice continues.